Welcome to Assembly Line, the podcast for entrepreneurs building on the Salesforce platform. We'll go behind the scenes with innovative founders and leaders to share their stories, strategies, and lessons to accelerate your own path to success as a Salesforce ISV. Are you struggling to make sense of the Salesforce security review? It's the number one roadblock slowing down your AppExchange launch. Security Review Partner translates those complex reports into a simple, prioritized checklist. Stop deciphering jargon and start shipping faster. Get the clear, step-by-step guidance you need to pass the review with confidence. Simplify your path to market. Visit securityreviewpartner.com today. That's securityreviewpartner.com. I'm joined today by Zach Rothstein, founder and president of Sales Ready. Welcome to Assembly Line, Zach.
Thanks, Scott. I appreciate it. Good to meet you. Good to have you.
Yeah. I'm glad you could join. So let's just get into it. Could you tell us a little bit about Sales Ready, what the app does, what your target market is, what problems it solves?
Yeah, sure. We built Sales Ready a handful of years ago. Kind of stemmed from two things. We built a couple iterations of, call them product pickers back in the day, doing, you know, consulting work for various businesses, and then dove into doing, building a very elaborate, I'll say, you know, field service add-on, if you will, that kind of incorporated quoting, document generation, e-signature. And then there was a second project where it was more focused on the consumer goods side of Salesforce. They were using field service as well. They weren't the happiest with the mobile application. So essentially we extended that with like a custom built, again, you know, product picker, if you will. And then we, you know, decided to take that to the ISV side and build out this quoting tool that would incorporate, you know, document generation and e-signature, because there were so many customers that, you know, simply put, just wanted to be able to have a nice quoting experience. Obviously, some of those are going to be more complex. Some of those are going to be pretty straightforward. You know, whether it's one, multiple line items, some of them may or may not have more advanced engines behind those. But we took that idea of like a quoting engine or quote builder, if you will. And through some iterations, we've built this kind of, we'll call it a universal quote builder, that ideally will help different industries potentially. You know, some service based, some, you know, more product focused. And then we, through some other iterations, built this idea of document generation, which is obviously not a new thing on the Salesforce side. There's been many companies, big companies, and others who have built tools, you know, on the Salesforce platform, whether they're native or not native. And we wanted to build something better by incorporating a quote builder into that document generation process. And a lot of times document generation incorporates a signature. And so we decided to build, at the beginning, it was a fully native app to Salesforce. Our first iteration of Sales Ready was, and then, at this point there's different components that are not all native, but, you know, took that e-signature piece and built an external web application, which it is now, to kind of bring together this idea of you know, I guess the terms now are, you know, there's different terminology in the RevOps world. You know, quote to cash is the big one, and it seems like ideal timing, especially because, you know, we did go through projects where we implemented CPQ. And, you know, CPQ has done a lot of great things for a lot of great Salesforce customers. And we had some successful CPQ implementations, but we had some not so successful CPQ implementations as well. And, you know, there's always reasons for that. And I think there were, you know, issues and limitations with just being able to generate a document and letting customers generate a document in a somewhat easy to use and understandable or digestible way. And so that's where we, you know, eventually partnered with this company to integrate with Salesforce and create SalesReady. And that's essentially this template builder that integrates with our package, which is SalesReady, which is, you know, some of it is native to Salesforce, and then there's things that are done outside of Salesforce. And so, for example, like our quote builder can be used in different places within Salesforce. Right now, basically any line item object, you could just drag and drop this idea of a quote builder onto those objects. Quotes, opportunities, work orders, orders, service contracts. There's a couple other ones as well. And then the document generation and e-signature generally works in any object. So you can pretty simply configure it with a couple of just quick actions on those lightning record pages to basically call this container, if you will, for just generating documents and sending, generate documents and send for e-signature. Through our web services. Compare it to essentially taking certain pieces of like a CPQ, you know, something like Conga Composer and something like DocuSign. However, we are in those spaces. We would not be considered to be anything like those companies, just in terms of how we would compare as to who we are going after and, some of the ideas we've gotten from those apps and from those partners. We've done a lot of fun implementations with Conga Composer as well, and a lot of stuff with DocuSign. And we, came up with this concept where, ideally down the road, there's going to be more things incorporated. And I think having a full blown quote builder that is scalable, that will do many things. Not just this idea of, adding line items or grouping line items putting things, discounts and things associated to line items to build this idea of a great quote. But, incorporating, sales tax calculations, incorporating payment links and doing all those sorts of fun things. But for now, it's the focus is the quote builder and the document generation and the e-signature.
That's great. So it sounds like you were doing some consulting projects, found a scratch a lot of folks had, an itch that a lot of folks had, and realized a way to scratch it, and then also build upon that, right? So, I mean, quote generation is one of those things. I feel like you ask four sales reps how it should work, and you're going to get seven different answers back, right? So even though they're, like you mentioned, there's Salesforce CPQ, and there are some native tools that Salesforce provides for doing that kind of thing, SalesReady is able to go a little bit deeper and provide a little bit more customization for the quote building piece. And then that just lends itself, like once quotes are built, of course, the next iteration is, okay, well, I also want to be able to generate documents and I want to get those documents e-signed. So it sounds like you kind of are just iteratively building on this as it goes along. So that's great.
Yeah, we have. Go ahead.
No, please.
Yeah, we've used this term, I guess, enhanced quoting experience, because originally, it was like, okay, you know what? Salesforce quoting out of the box, like, honestly, works fine for plenty of customers. Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be anything fancy. You know, the old school PDF builder is great. If you just want a quick Visualforce template, like, those are really fun to build. And so that's where we got a lot of our ideas from. And again, just doing CPQ projects and field service projects where, like, the idea of quoting, even though they were service people, they quote, right? Because they give people, whether it's quote and invoice or both, they give those to customers as they're leaving or when they get there or whatever it is, wherever, they're servicing. Mm-hmm. And so, we took that concept of just trying to make quoting a little better. And that's what we're doing all the time. Just trying to make quoting a little bit better, with these main focus areas by trying to blend them together, but try to make a cohesive experience while not tying each one necessarily to one another.
Mm-hmm. Well, so maybe you could give us also some context on where SalesReady is today in terms of current revenue, team size, customer count, whatever you're comfortable sharing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. We have a few guys that started up with I was working with them at a consulting firm, and we basically, one of those companies got sold off, and we started this other consulting firm, and then that's where we started doing the SalesReady stuff. So right now it's a few people, and we have a little more than a handful of customers, one pretty large customer mm-hmm. that we've had and serviced for a while now, and starting to pick up things. Things are starting to get much more fun and interesting as we are really putting much more time, effort, investment into the tool. So we're kind of at that point where, we have a lot of great things going on our professional services side, but we are starting to shift to trying to attribute a lot of things to SalesReady that would be applicable to, customers now and customers in the future.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. So you had the professional services side, which is kind of the source, it sounds like, for the app to begin with. Beyond, though, the projects you already had and the customers you were seeing that needed this scratch itched, or this itch scratched, did you do any sort of validation of the market, like customer interviews or anything like that? Or how did you go about making sure that you'd get to product market fit?
Yeah. We basically had, we were lucky to find a, I would say, a handful of beta customers that we worked with probably over a year. Mm-hmm. And, the nice thing is they, quickly more or less became paying customers. And so they were all very uniquely different businesses. And it was interesting as we're, going through iterations of the tool. Basically we've done, I would say, three major iterations. And so, where we were in 2020 when we went through our first security review compared to now, and I think I did a post on LinkedIn about this recently, but the app is entirely different. It's funny because it looks the same, but it is entirely different. The code is entirely different. We have some stuff native to Salesforce. We have our external services hosted on Microsoft Azure. And so that work community, luckily having the reach to work with a handful of customers who really helped us, gave us some nice reviews, gave us some referrals, and, started to, what we're starting to see now is kind of somewhat those doors opening a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so it's a grind. It's hard. It's a lot of work. None of us, the few of us don't have any true SaaS experience until this, right? We've built products. We've been involved in different companies that, some of them were products, but they were not SaaS in the nature of a ISV SaaS, I guess, in the Salesforce world or mm-hmm. whatever other platform you want to relate to. But it's been fun because as you're trying to see where you fit and if you have a viable product, until you get to a point where you start to see things, churning a little bit faster, you kind of just go with the flow. We're a bootstrap company, which has its pros and cons. Like I said, we've changed our model in the sense that where we're allocating our time, investments, stuff like that, how we're going to go maybe at some point find, other investors as well. Those are conversations we're starting to have, some of them slower than others, right? Because if you don't have a being, I guess, I mean, I'm a technical guy, so there are a lot of things I don't understand about trying to put together even a business plan, right? And luckily, I know some people and have some good friends who actually helped me put together a business plan, and that was pretty recent. So, you know, the good and the bad is there's a lot of focus on the product, and that's been the focus. And getting good feedback. So, attrition wise, we've only lost one customer ever. And that's because they just weren't really interested in Salesforce anymore. Nothing Salesforce did wrong or anything. Like, they're still using Salesforce, but they wanted to incorporate their quoting into some other tool. They were like a limo company, a rental company. Mm-hmm. And they had a great use case. We put together all this stuff and unfortunately just didn't work out. But, you know, the good news is everybody else has stayed around because we've been focusing on the product, the service, the all these things. And, you know, only recently started to do and build things that are really going to, I would say, help us scale, you know, 4, 6, 8, 12 months from now, ideally. So,
yeah, I think you can make a lot of mistakes that will be covered up so long as you're staying focused on the core principle of, you know, listening to customers. Staying focused on iterating based on customer feedback and building something that people need, right? So you'd mentioned that you're a technical founder, less experience on the SaaS and business side, but I think keeping your focus on the customers is the right way to go. So you being a technical founder, you'd mentioned earlier that you went through security review. I'm curious how that process went for you, because I think a lot of ISVs focus on the development solely and don't get the ball rolling on security review, until they're completely done with development and then are surprised to find that security review actually takes a good amount of time. And it's not all just about truly the review of your code base. But there are some phone calls and some questions about kind of your go-to-market strategy and your marketing strategy and things like that. And, you know, you'd mentioned being a little bit lighter on the business side in your experience. I'm curious how that went for the Sales Ready team.
Yeah, we got approved in 2020. Things might be a little bit different. We've actually done some other security reviews for some other products we've worked on. The process seemed somewhat similar. It's a process. I think what I learned is frankly a lot about security and Salesforce security, and it just opened the door for wanting to learn and understand more, because you just don't want to be in a situation where, you know, you're willing to be in a tough spot. Insurance is a bad comparison, as I guess, but I think it's important. Like, I'm not, you know, in terms of thinking about security, it's not probably more until recently something that has seemed as fun to me. It has become more fun because I think you just have to embrace it. And now in terms of like the actual security review for Salesforce, we were kind of in the middle of what you said in terms of like focus on building the app and then go back and fix your queries because they don't include, they weren't, you know, incorporating, the right operations to run as the specific user. Course, if you run it through, some of those tools, it's going to be like, well, this query is just open-ended. You know, anybody who has access to the package can run a query that's outside of the scope of what data they should have access to. It's interesting because, you know, it's like, okay, well, a lot of this is like, these are my objects. Now, we don't have like a bunch of objects in our package, so I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, you know, oh, we have a configuration object. So it's like, oh, this seems annoying, but it's like, you will become a better engineer. You'll become a better product. You'll become a better, I think, business person. If you are consistent with things that matter, you know, it's like, SOC 2 is a whole nother thing that's like, it's overwhelming. There's a lot to it. And if you eventually want to get to that point, you know, you got to start somewhere. You have to have the foundation set. And, you know, we learned those things, especially with being not a fully native app. So like when we went through security review, you know, they came back with some things, you know, it's been so long, but they came back with some things and, you know, ran it through the security toolkit. And, you know, a lot of, you know, came back with, you know, here's 30 things you have to fix. Mm-hmm. And the majority of them were like pretty straightforward. Now, getting through the security review, I feel like is one thing where I think people will get hung up or people will, you know, sometimes overlook is maintenance, right? So we don't know what's changing with the Salesforce security, you know, framework, their ecosystem, their partner security review process, with all the stuff that's changed and what's happening. So I would say, you know, make it a priority. And in terms of like what I'm actually telling myself right now is, you know, needs to be a priority always. And, you know, build tools if you can to, you know, help with writing better code, more secure code, you know, try some of these AI tools. That's the point of AI. It's not to take anybody's job, but it's supposed to make it better. It's supposed to make the experience better. It's supposed to help you build better habits and do all these things that are really important to building not just a secure app, but you want a functional app too. Why, you know, it's like, can't have, and we learned this because it's like, okay, you know, especially having it an application that runs some stuff outside of Salesforce is like there, if you're considering if this is worth investing time in it, the answer is always yes. Now, if you don't have the means or the money to do so, then that's a different story. It's not like you have to go bankrupt because you can't afford a SOC 2 or whatever report, but, you know, I definitely learned a lot because my initial intro into, you know, software development was not necessarily tied to security because it was mm-hmm. all revolved around a local environment, if you will, that wasn't as concerning, if you will, mm-hmm. you know, to the what Salesforce has and is as an ecosystem and you know what ISVs owe their customers and owe Salesforce for, you know, being able to piggyback off of their customer base.
Sure. Yeah. You mentioned all the changes that are coming down the pipe. So, you know, for context, obviously there's the data loader hack and then, just right on its heels, the announcement from SalesLoft that's impacted so many customers. Right. So I think you're wise to point out that Salesforce's security review team is probably going to be tapping on a lot of partner shoulders in the coming months, especially those that have external servers doing integrations with the Salesforce APIs. I mean, I honestly can recall when I was newer to the platform, ISVs went through that initial security review, and then I know partners that went 10 years without another re-review. And only in the past 5 years or so have I seen Salesforce start being more serious about re-reviews, which is a good thing. And I definitely think on the heels of these hacks, we're going to see a lot more effort on their side to make sure that their partner ecosystem is as secure as the platform itself. So I think you're spot on there. Let's shift gears. I want to talk a little bit about go-to-market strategy, specifically what are some of the main channels that have worked to date for Sales Ready. I think it's especially useful being you'd mentioned that you're a bootstrap company. I think a lot of viewers and listeners will be as well. So I'd be especially interested to hear what kind of budget-friendly channels have worked well for y'all.
There's, you know, a lot of the channels are I think budget friendly. I think, you know, it's different nowadays with, you know, you don't want to buy an email, a list of emails, and just send an email to people necessarily. Mm-hmm. You know, based on my experience, that's not very helpful. What's been the most helpful tool right now, I would say, is just building connections on LinkedIn and mm-hmm. seeing what other people are doing and posting what we're doing, being vulnerable and just embracing like the change, which is, you know, right now we don't have like people cold calling and just on the phone dialing all day. And there's nothing wrong with that. Cause I think, you know, in a perfect world, I would love to learn how to do that. Mm-hmm. and to have that experience, that understanding or the ability to just seem natural and sound natural on the phone. But I'm not. So, frankly, it's us leveraging our existing networks. It's a lot of LinkedIn. Frankly, the most important thing is face to face. You know, in terms of, you know, this is our first Dreamforce, or it's about to be our first Dreamforce, and we're putting together a lot of stuff to make ourselves known. You know, we're not going to, as of now, sponsor anything at Salesforce. We're trying to make it work. You know, it's very expensive. And sure. Most bootstrap companies, who wants to pay for that? And nothing at Salesforce for what they cost. It's just is what it is, right? Because, you know, they can charge that. So, you know, we're just focusing on our own personal brand, literally, like, okay, we're going to go to Dreamforce. Let's get some nice shirts. Let's hand out some things. You know, I don't know exactly how it works. You know, like I said, I've never actually been to Dreamforce, but, you know, we are, you know, trying to go all in within reason so that, we capitalize on, you know, it's already an expensive event, expensive week, all that fun stuff. And it's, you know, frankly, there are going to be companies who go to market and need to go to market faster, you know, than us. It's been a slow burn for us because we've been focusing on other things sometimes over the years, and now things are starting to pick up. So like the focus is very much been sales ready, and that will be the focus, you know, for the future or in the future. So, you know, we're able to do it at a slower pace, but at the same time, like if you're going at 100 miles an hour, you know, there's a happy medium, I think, in terms of what you can do or what you should be doing. You know, based on, you know, the product you have, the people you have. And so, you know, we focus on the product, focus on the brand, the face. And then when you get get an inbound lead from the App Exchange, you know, try to think outside the box in terms of this person probably watched more than one video. You know, we have a video on the App Exchange. They probably did all sorts of stuff. Now they might do it over a period of time where they go back and who knows, they may have Salesforce, they might not. That's the beauty and hard part about the App Exchange. Is some of those people just don't even have, may not even have Salesforce, or they may be on a trial or, you know, whatever. We got to install from somebody that's on a trial, and it's, you know, it's cool, but, you know, they might not buy Salesforce. So sure. Interesting to see, you know.
Two sales need to happen for you all to get a customer.
Yeah, for sure. But on the flip side, I do envision having that building, working towards that, and maybe being a being a stepping stone or if you will, for, you know, something in Salesforce or building more things in Salesforce, right? Like, you know, it's great. Hey, here's all these Salesforce customers. There's however many people install stuff, 14 million installs on the App Exchange or something like that. And, you know, we want to tap into that heavily. And that's why we're focusing on, you know, LinkedIn is great, and there's some other, you know, it's mainly that and just getting your name out there. But
building an App Exchange business can be isolating. Are you tired of guessing what the right next move is to grow and scale? Don't go it alone. ISV Forge surrounds you with a curated group of fellow ISV founders who are on the same journey. We combine peer accountability with expert-led weekly webinars to help you overcome roadblocks and build a thriving business. Stop guessing and start scaling. Apply for the next cohort today at isvforge.com. That's isvforge.com.
You know, we get an inbound lead. We're starting to get more creative in terms of like what we say, what we offer. And a lot of times it seems more apparent or obvious that, you know, it doesn't have to, you know, you could make a sales pitch if you want in an email. 9 times out of 10, for us, we're an unknown brand. It's different when unknown meaning like, you know, at some point people will start to know our name, and that's what we've been working towards. But, you know, a lot of people, they're like never heard of us. And, you know, we're in different categories on the App Exchange for, you know, I think quotes and orders, document generation and contract management. And so, you know, we're in different places within each of those categories. And so, trying to get more creative. Sometimes we use AI, you know, in terms of not like, oh, we just have this process running. It sends them an automated email. It's like, well, let's give them some catered experience. Let's say something, you know, that they need to respond to, hopefully they want to respond to, because it's not like, hey, we have this cool product. Sometimes they can, you know, it seems like a lot of times they can figure it out for themselves. You know, it's okay, what can you offer? It's a little different, especially in where we're at. You know, it's exciting because CPQ is going away, but it's going to take forever for all the sure. Salesforce customers to be off CPQ. It's going to take 100 years. And nothing, that's great. You know, I hope all of them, you know, get everything they want out of it. But, you know, what's nice is we will start to see more people looking for tools like ours. And that's why we are in kind of an exciting, well, not kind of, we're in a really exciting space. So, you know, the answer to your question is, you know, a very much a grind in terms of it's really exciting and it's tiring, but just, you know, just we're just starting to think outside the box in terms of like, okay, we don't have experience with like this big SaaS tool, but if we want to get there, we have to be open to trying different things sure. because sometimes traditional things work really well, but sometimes traditional things are a complete waste of time. It just depends.
Yeah. It's one of the benefits of being smaller is you can run a lot of these mini experiments. And even when you fall flat on your face, if you're small, no one really sees, right?
Very true.
Yeah. So you mentioned a few times about leads coming in from the App Exchange. And you also talked about how you're set up to be in a few different categories. I'm curious, would you say the majority of leads that you're seeing today are more from kind of outbound activities, sort of like that warm outreach that you're doing on LinkedIn and almost like founder-led sales? Or are you seeing a lot more inbound from App Exchange itself?
Probably more of the latter. I okay. think it's a marathon, not a sprint, in terms of like the outbound and building those relationships and building those networks.
Sure.
Because yeah, I've learned pretty quickly, and I think a lot of us have learned pretty quickly. You know, people want to talk to people. They don't really necessarily want to be sold from somebody. It's okay to be sold, right? But they don't know you, you know, they know nothing about you. You know, LinkedIn historically was more of a safe space for just building a community, kind of like Facebook, like whatever, you know, all these different places, and they've changed mm-hmm. to be different things, right? Facebook has an ad everywhere you look. LinkedIn has an ad everywhere you look. Like people are reaching out, you know, to you know, create businesses off of Facebook, create businesses off of LinkedIn. None of that I'm saying is bad at all or you know, whatever. I'm just saying, you know, that's different than probably what it used to be. So like I would say we get more inbound leads, and 80% of them are just people that are businesses that I've never heard of even. And some of them are big, some of them are small. Oftentimes, you know, people who work in the Salesforce ecosystem are just interested in like understanding what's out there. And I would say if you're a small company, I would say this, Dust, what we're learning is like, you should never turn away a conversation. You know, now if you feel like there it's invalid for whatever reason, because it seems like a scheme or something weird is going on, different story. But in terms of like, okay, well, if somebody wants to talk to you, if somebody's interested, they want to understand Salesforce, they want to understand what you do, they want to understand, you know, based on, maybe it was based on a LinkedIn post or something, somebody looking for a job, somebody who is interested in learning Salesforce development, somebody who, you know, wants to understand this or that. Those are all really valuable conversations we've had. We're trying to work right now with a person who was at a previous company that we did some work with, and she's trying to convince the company to try out Sales Ready. And we had such a good relationship with her. You'd think it would be easy, but of course it's not, because nobody knows who we are. And so but it makes it kind of fun too. So, you know, if you don't have the networks based on, you know, if you haven't worked in the Salesforce space and you're just building something from scratch because it seems fun or interesting, or you're interested in AI or Agentforce or, you know, whatever, it's gonna take time, right? Based on what we know, what we've done, who we are. Like I said, we don't have a massive following or a massive backing. We just have a few people that think this is going to be really cool based on bad experiences with other situations or tools. And they're not all bad. They're honestly, a lot of them have been great. And so we've, you know, learned a lot from those and from our competitors.
Since the majority of the leads are coming inbound from AppExchange, have there been any changes you've made since enabling your listing that you noticed really opened the floodgates more for more leads to come in, or any tips you have for kind of optimizing your AppExchange listing to create more leads?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would love to better understand that myself. And I think what I've seen is we're in a unique space, unique in the sense that everybody wants to be able to do some type of quoting in Salesforce, even if they know it or not. Everybody wants to generate some type of document, whether they know it or not. Everybody, so many people use DocuSign with Salesforce already, you know, whatever it is, whatever tools they're using currently. Which again, nothing wrong with that. We've done plenty of DocuSign integrations before, but you know, we've made changes in the sense that there are, I think, some really neat tools out there on the AppExchange that are flexible in the sense that they work in different places. I don't think people like being confined in Salesforce. I think that's a little more. That's a little outdated. Now there's plenty of great apps that, you know, can work in different places in Salesforce. But we've just reworded some things sometimes, use different buzzwords. Like the focus originally was on this idea of quotes because our tool worked really around the quote object. Now it works around other objects, and it's flexible and can be used in different places. So it's like, okay, we've changed the terminology and the naming convention for, you know, instead of enhanced quoting, maybe it's like, oh, from quotes to work orders, right? They're different things, but they talk more to sales and service, which is arguably where I see us headed towards, kind of, you know, building out more of like the field service side of the world. So we just talked to a partner that has built a pretty neat app and has like a cool, it has just cool, like useful tools for making Salesforce easier for people who are using it day to day and they have to go around and click a million buttons, right? There's some really neat tools out there. And That's important. And they posted something recently about, you know, field service. And if you have field service, you know, try this. And so we're learning that not only do we want to extend Salesforce, well, not only, it may be instead of, we want to extend specific areas within Salesforce, or different products within Salesforce, you know, and I use field service as an example, because this project we did a long time ago, which kind of gave us this idea, was a field, two of them were field service projects. And we wanted to take that concept and make it better. So, you know, we're like, okay, let's use more of this terminology instead of just quotes, because I think from what I've seen, you know, quoting tools can seem complicated or seem complex or seem like it has to have this fancy engine or all this stuff behind it. Our tool is more geared towards, like, we don't want you to struggle to build like an actual quote record. We want you to, if you spend time learning anything in SalesReady, we want you to be able to build your own awesome documents, which is historically been a struggle for all sorts of customers using all sorts of apps, is building their own documents, right? Because there's different ways to do that. And so we've focused on promoting our template builder to kind of work with our quoting experience so that, you know, you are focusing on things that we want you to focus on, not like this idea of, hey, here's our quoting tool, which they immediately might be like, oh, is this like CPQ or is this like, you know, what is this? And it's not at all. So.
Well, you mentioned a few times now how you have kind of these sort of three main functions, right, of building out your custom quote, but also doing document generation and also doing e-signature. Is there a single price for SalesReady that you charge for customers and then they get all three? Or do you have like a tiered pricing structure or like a feature-based pricing structure where, you know, you could purchase just document generation if that's all you needed?
It's a great question. And right now we just have one price and we talk about it every single day in terms of, maybe not every day, but we talk about it often in terms of like, you know, should these be different price points? We are about to announce a partnership with a specific company that's going to make our quote builder pretty unique, way more unique than it even is now. There might be like an add-on for that. We might eventually have certain add-ons, but to be honest, like I think, which might be something that eventually we have to accept in terms of like, you know, we're limiting ourselves. We've heard this a couple of times, like, you know, you have different things. You should have different price points for these things. We're not ready to do that right just yet because we do have customers that use certain features within the app, but like ultimately, like the quote builder is just a utility to make Salesforce easier and more fun. The template builder is a way to build documents that actually allows you to do it yourself in theory. And the e-signature piece is nice because it's really a scalable platform for doing all sorts of fun stuff. And we're building all sorts of fun stuff into that. Some things I don't want to mention yet because they're still in the beta phase, but you know, all these things are certainly unique. So it's like, you know, why wouldn't they have different price points? And if you ask me in a year, the answer might be totally different. And, you know, based on feedback, I would say the one thing we haven't dove deep enough into is pricing, but like, I don't want to be necessarily like, I would hate to have it be overpriced. That would be the worst thing we could do. We're trying to literally stay away from that. We're trying to have this, we don't want to have this overpriced tool. We want to have this unique suite of tools that is at a simple price point, that offers a lot and, you know, allows you to grow with Salesforce, allows you to grow with our tool, allows you to grow with other, you know, tools that are on the AppExchange or integrate with Salesforce. So that's the goal, is to just be another tool. Like I said, might have different price points at some point. But for now, you know, we have this one price point, which came from a kind of a random place, in terms of, like,
has it changed at all since you first, first released the product?
So it's like, you know, we started in the lower 20s. Now we're at the higher 20s. And most of our customers, you know, fall in the middle there in terms of, like, if we give them discounts based on, you know, how many people or how many users, because everything is user-based for now, or user-driven. And so I think, some days I really like our price point. We can give decent discounts without, undermining the functionality that the tool provides. But I think pricing is the hardest thing, that strategy, building that momentum, getting feedback. You will hear from 100 different people, 100 different things. So it's like, you know, your go-to-market strategy is, there's certain things you just have to go with your gut. That my gut might change at some point here soon, because not because we feel like we need to blow the price up, maybe like a touch, but it's more just like, okay, is there a better way to do this? Because we do have such a unique set of tools that, you know, we hope, you know, people start to really appreciate, instead of just thinking of it as just, you know, some quoting tool.
Well, I'm curious. I think a lot of founders have heard the advice that pricing is one of the most powerful levers that you can pull to impact your business, right? So I think a lot of SaaS businesses are considering if they need to tweak their pricing. Since you did, I know you said it was only a little bit, but you did raise prices. You also mentioned earlier that you've only had a single customer churned, and that was really honestly more about them becoming less invested in Salesforce in general. So it sounds like you had a very successful strategy for raising your price. So I'm just curious, like, how did you notify customers? What kind of timeline did you give them? Was it across the board, or did you keep legacy pricing for your existing customers, or did you put like a time deadline on that and when they would have to move up to the new price? Sounds like it was very successful for you.
Yeah, it was all over the board, I guess, like in terms of some people, some people were like, we don't want to pay any more than this, but they did add 10 more licenses, for example. It was like, oh, okay, that's cool. So sometimes in the earlier, stages, you're like, there are things you can't accept, and there's things you can't accept. So there, that strategy, the price was, almost irrelevant to most people. Users can be, we have users with 30 companies, 30 users, companies with 5 to 10 users. So it ultimately just depended. For most of those companies, it didn't really make much of a difference. Mm-hmm. It's hard to speak to what that would look like for other companies. Frankly, we've done more, consulting and just helping companies, not just implement SalesReady, but we just help, give them insight into things, have conversations with them and do all these, sorts of things. And it's like, okay, so do you have like a professional services fee or support package or, this or that to offset what you feel like is less than an ideal, price point for them. I don't know. It's a good, and like we've been thinking about that and we talk about those things, but that's not like a big conversation or anything. It's more just, trying to give a fair price point, because like, there's just frankly, some of the, products out there. There's plenty that are really nicely, you know, priced. Some of them are sneaky pricing with, you know, based on minimums or, you know, based on this or that. And sneaky, I don't, you know, no, don't mean to sound too harsh, but, you know, sometimes on the App Exchange, it's hard to tell what your actual spend is going to be. And I think that's like, that's so important is transparency. So that's the more important thing, I think. But again, you know, there are companies that, and especially in the B2B SaaS world, that are, don't have transparent pricing, and that does not deter them, or does not deter those customers, for all sorts of reasons that I may or may not understand. So it'll be interesting to see if that perspective of super transparent pricing is even helpful, or if it's like, should we be scaling in a way that's like, should we even have a set price point? Should it be, you know, based on, and then I've seen a lot of, I've seen more software companies do this, not really, not necessarily like ISVs, but I'm sure some of the bigger ones do that, like, you know, are the big companies that have products on the App Exchange. But some of them, you know, have like add-on fees or this or that or whatever. And some of it is just like depending on not just volume, but it's like, you know, could be all sorts of stuff, transactions, you know, what type of business they're in, you know, how many employees they have. I've seen all sorts of stuff that is unique and something to consider sometimes, because you don't want to be cheap.
Yeah.
But you want to provide something at a fair price. So.
Sure. Well, you'd mentioned that you're, you know, a technical founder and a little bit lighter on the business side. And I wanted to just ask, when it came to hiring and growing the Sales Ready team, one, how did you know when it was time to make your first hire? And two, what were the roles you hired for first? Because I think sometimes it's easier to interview and hire folks that have a similar skill set, because it's easier for you to gauge the experience level of a person in an interview. And yet, oftentimes you need someone that complements your skill set. And it's a little bit harder if you don't have it yourself to judge in an interview if the candidate does.
Yeah. We brought somebody to kind of work on both sides of the business. And he's just great at talking to people and wants to learn. Mm-hmm. There's nothing better than that with somebody with life experience, somebody that's eager to learn. You know, in terms of like, you know, the technical side, I think that'll come soon enough. You know, I think people that, you know, the term, what's the term? You know, they do different things, different life experience. Somebody who's process oriented, somebody that it can take a step back and kind of evaluate a situation, mm-hmm. Without, you know, reacting too quickly, which oftentimes I can do, and just trying to do things so fast, getting tied up in things. So, what's been nice is, bringing that person on and, having somebody that's like, again, somebody you can talk to, chat with, bounce ideas off of, isn't going a million miles an hour, because if you're running it, if you're trying to build and scale an ISV, sometimes it's just going to feel like you're just overwhelmed, exhausted, but in a good way. But it's just, you know, you need to take a step back sometimes and ask questions and wait for an answer instead of just asking a question and just assuming you already have the answer before, you know, somebody cares to answer. So, yeah.
Well, I want to ask too, as we wrap up here, if you were restarting your Salesforce ISV journey today, what skills would you take from the experience you've had, or put another way, what advice would you give to someone who is just starting out their own ISV?
Yeah, you know, I would say embrace it, be ready to learn, don't be afraid of mistakes. Don't be afraid of building something and realizing this is okay, but this could be so much better. That will happen. I'm sure for plenty of other companies, they have more people to answer questions and provide guidance and insight. And it's nice to, if anybody ever asks, it's nice to, just like you're asking, it's nice to provide, my experience. But I think, be ready for, there's a book I read my daughter. It's nice. She's getting old enough to like hand me the book now. It's called Beautiful Oops. And, it's like a book where, there's all these things happening in the book, torn paper, just these like illusions of things, things you kind of pop up open, and it's just kind of a mess, but in the most beautiful way possible. So, it's just fun because that's kind of how I look back and, there were times where I didn't really embrace this and I got really overwhelmed. And, at the end of the day, you put your heart and soul into it, so you can't really help but sometimes like not feel good or be frustrated or, wanting to quit. But, then there are times where it's like, it's one of the best feelings as, you hit this milestone, you get this reaction, you build this thing, even if it's not in the most beautiful way, you kind of have to embrace that beautiful oops, I guess. So it's been fun, seeing it from that perspective. And, I guess in terms of like change, there's a million things I would have done differently in the sense that like only from like more like from a technical perspective. And I don't literally mean a million. I mean, like, now that based on what I've learned, security would have been, security is huge. Like don't just, the security is massive. Don't not do it. Definitely start and understand that, based on what you're doing, if you're doing it like us, it's a, slow and steady. I think we'll win the race. Again, that's not going to be the case for every business. I can't share a bunch of other experiences in building all these different businesses, but I can share, that, it's been fun. And, just embrace the ups and downs, and just keep your, learn and ask questions, and don't be afraid to connect with people and put yourself out there.
I love it. Embrace the beautiful oops. I'm going to remember that. Yeah. Well, speaking of connecting with people, Zach, where can folks, if they want to learn more about you or Sales Ready, how can they reach out?
So there's our website, salesready.io. It has some cool stuff on there. It has a test environment, no authentication required. There's some documentation on there. I like to Slack. I like to chat with people. I don't know if my email address gets like posted or anything, but, people can find me there on LinkedIn. Hopefully if you follow us, you'll see some cool posts that might be meaningful, whether it's like, related to Sales Ready or not. That's our goal, is to just talk about fun things that are what we're doing or what we're interested in or what we like. And so, yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll add some links to the show notes for your LinkedIn and salesready.io. But Zach, thanks so much for coming on today, and, best of luck to you and the team, and good luck at your first Dreamforce.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it, Scott. Good chat.
Cheers.
With you.
See
you. Are you looking to connect with the most dedicated founders and builders in the Salesforce ecosystem? The AppAssemblyLine audience is made up of the exact ISV partners and entrepreneurs you're trying to reach. We're opening up a few sponsorship slots to partner with brands that can truly help our listeners succeed. If you're ready to connect with the leaders of the AppExchange, you can learn more at AppAssemblyLine.com/sponsor. That's AppAssemblyLine.com
sponsor.